Welcome to All Sides Weekend. I'm your host, Claire Roth. Amina Robinson was among Columbus's most well-known and well-loved hometown artists. She didn't confine herself to one medium, opting instead to work in woodcuts, fiber, paints, found objects, anything that inspired her. Though she died in 2015, her legacy burns bright through her work and through those that she inspired. King Arts Complex will host a family day to celebrate and honor Robinson. You can find out more about that at wosu.org/allsides. Carol Genshaft is the curator at large at the Columbus Museum of Art, and she's put together exhibits of Robinson's work. She joins us now. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So help us understand her work. What was it like to curate it?
It's pretty amazing. As Amina told it, she would get up at 4 or 4:30 in the morning and work well into the night. So she was very prolific. And when she passed away in 2015, she left her estate to the Columbus Museum of Art. And that has been quite an undertaking. So for the last almost 3 years, we have been photographing her work, documenting it. And in addition to the art, which there is a lot of that, she also kept very regularly journals. She was very poetic. She wrote a lot. So there's all that material as well. And as you said, she worked in so many media. She was kind of the original recycler. And that it's fascinating to see the work in leather, in parchment, in envelopes, in little paper bags. She just turned everyday objects into things of great beauty. So it's just such a privilege to work with her. The work that she left, I can't even express how wonderful it is.
Absolutely. I'm wondering if you can describe one or two pieces that you really feel like, this is gorgeous. Because for those of us who might not have been able to see her work, you know, it's radio. So help us understand, what does it look like? What spoke to you about it?
Well, one piece I came across was very small. I could hold it in my hand. It's about 3 inches by 4 inches. And it's 30 different little pen and inks, a little pastel on homemade paper, as she called it. And it's all of African-American women, many whose names you might know, like Maya Angelou or Alice Walker, but then also her mother and people that are kind of Columbus folks, like Ursel White Lewis, who was a wonderful patron of the arts who passed away not too long ago on Columbus's east side and promoted artists like Amina in the neighborhood. So this little piece, and I'm currently working on an exhibition for 2020.
Oh, wow.
This will be a highlight of that. It's just this, it just shows her amazing skill at working in so many different media and formats, and it's just beautiful.
It's interesting you bring that up, because something that struck me when I was researching into Amina was her use of things that were originally in the feminine realm, like fiber, things that were used in sewing. I'm wondering if you can speak to that at all.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I think for a long time, artists who worked in those kinds of media were underappreciated or perhaps not recognized as a fine artist. And I think her work and others like her raised that to the level of fine art. I think her mother taught her how to do crocheting and something she called button work. So her mother, Amina was the middle of three girls, and her mother would have the girls take buttons and attach them to cloth and then use them as tablecloths or on armchairs. But for Amina, those buttons became very meaningful. They represented the souls of the people who wore the clothes that the buttons came from. And she kind of raised that whole idea of sewing and these buttons to a new level. And they're in her work, and they provide this extra level of meaning, I think, of almost spiritual kind of meaning.
You talk about one of the exhibits that you are creating for 2020. CMOA has had multiple exhibits, I believe, of Robinson's work in the past. Some of them have toured nationwide. Mm-hmm. What does her work mean past Columbus? We obviously love her here. Tell us about some of the impact she's had on the larger art world, you know, beyond the bounds of the city.
Well, her work is in a number of other museums. The Brooklyn Museum, where the retrospective toured the Tacoma Art Museum, the Newark Art Museum. And frankly, one of our goals in dealing with the estate is to get her legacy out there. So this exhibition that will open at the museum in 2020 in the summer, we are now setting up other venues. And hopefully I'd love to have several other venues, certainly one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast. She has a gallery in New York, so there, and they actually put her work in a number of shows. So the word has gotten out, and there is, you know, people have purchased her work who live well beyond Ohio. But we're working on making that even her name more prevalent.
She grew up in Poindexter Village.
She did. Her family, she was born in 1940, and that was the year that Poindexter Village was completed. It was one of the first federally funded housing complexes in the country. And she and her family moved in and came to be, she always called them the first, one of the first families. And it was a very wonderful place to live. As she said, everybody knew everybody. The kids couldn't get away with anything because everybody was looking out for them. And it really makes that notion of it takes a village really have meaning. So she has, and other people I've met who lived there as well during that period in the 40s have nothing but fond memories of living in Poindexter Village.
Well, I was going to say, it seems like her art is really connected to where she came from, even if it's not quite as explicit as, for instance, doing these portraits of prominent Black women in Columbus. It feels like she always carried that with her, maybe.
She did. Columbus was extremely important to her. She talks about it all the time. One of her goals was to, and there's a wonderful quote she has about her whole mission was to put African Americans back into history. So she was especially fond of talking about Poindexter Village, Mount Vernon Avenue, and all the characters that inhabited it. And she would do this in many different ways, paintings, drawings, prints, three-dimensional sculptures. So Ohio, Columbus was really important to her, the history and kind of the ancient history even, and these legends that she heard from her elders. But then when she traveled, she also loved to do research on the places she traveled, which was many. She went to Europe. She went to she spent a residency in Israel and Chile, and she really would in kind of just embed herself in the history of wherever she went. So she wasn't just limited to Columbus, but I think Columbus was that mainstay that always appears in her work. In fact, she said when she went to Africa in 1979, she said she had to go all the way there to find Poindexter Village.
Wow. This is All Sides Weekend. My guest this hour, Carol Genshaft. She's a curator at large at the Columbus Museum of Art. And we are talking about the legacy of Amina Robinson, a painter from Columbus who died in 2015. You mentioned she went to Africa. And something, if you read even a little bit about Robinson, you'll see the word Sankofa. I don't know if I'm saying that quite right. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, the idea of Sankofa is the idea that I think is important for all of us, that you can't go forward, you can't live today unless you know where you came from. And that, again, was something that Amina lived by. So she believed that this history, that that she was actually put on earth to record this history, research it, and pass it on. And that, in fact, is her mantra, is that we all have important histories and that we should all take the time to talk to the elders in our family, record the history in whatever way. You don't have to be an artist, but, you know, you could write, you could film, you could photograph, but to keep those histories alive and going forward.
Even though she is so focused on that, it's never, I feel like, solemn. It's never overly serious. There's so much color in her work, and there seems to be still a lot of joy in it.
Absolutely. I think, as you mentioned, there's lots of color. There's lots of found objects. So in addition to the buttons, she loved to collect, costume jewelry, belt buckles, pocket watches, and you can find those in her work. She also embedded many music boxes in her work. She had this idea that she called symphonic poem, that all the arts would come together, be it theater, drama, visual art, music. And many of her works reflect that. She coined a term called ragging on, which is really easier to understand if you think about ragging on and on. And these were big works that she would add to and that had layers and that might take years. And as she said, were never really complete because you, the viewer, the visitor to the museum, interprets it and enhances the meaning of the work.
Wow. You have read some of her journals. I don't know if they'll be able to be displayed in the exhibit that's happening. What do you think? You know, Robinson's been interviewed many, many times. Columbus loves her, loved her. What do you think those journals add to our understanding of who Robinson was as a person and as an artist?
Well, I think they really reveal, as I said, her writing abilities and her. She wrote a lot of poetry. The early ones, when she was in her young, early 20s, they're very personal. They're very, she went through some difficult times. And they're even, to be quite honest, I won't be sharing those. But then there are other ones that talk a lot about the work, as I mentioned. So this idea of a symphonic poem was something that she pursued since she was really a teenager. This idea came to her. And much of the work that people will be more familiar with has strains that started very early. So drawing, for example, was very, very important to her. She always carried a sketchbook with her, even when she was a little girl. And so things like that that recur, I think, that are in the journals will be very interesting. And what we hope to do is have digital access to them. And not only is there text, but of course they're beautifully illustrated. And there's no other way to see them. We can't let people handle them.
Of course.
But we could have them there and open to one page and then access via computer monitor. So I think that's going to be very exciting for visitors.
Carol Genshaft is a curator at large at the Columbus Museum of Art. She's put together exhibits of Robinson's work, is working on another one for next year right now. This is All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking about Amina Robinson this hour and about Black artists in Columbus. If Robinson's work has touched you, if you want to share your feelings about a piece or about other art made by African-American creators here in the city, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. I'm your host, Claire Roth. The famed African-American artist Amina Robinson was born in Poindexter Village in Columbus. She graduated from the Columbus College of Art and Design. She lived here until her death in 2015. The King Arts Complex is hosting a family day in Robinson's honor. You can find out details about that at wosu.org/allsides. Still with us is curator at large at the Columbus Museum of Art, Carol Genshaft. And Marshall Shorts is a Columbus-based designer and founder of Artfluential, a creative design consulting firm. He joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You're very connected to the community of creatives of color here. How would you describe Amina's legacy?
Amina was a storyteller. I was able to learn a lot about Columbus, at least Black history, through her work. I actually live very close to Poindexter, like almost literally across the street. And so I was able to kind of fall in love with the history of Columbus through her work and some other Black artists.
Yeah, we were talking earlier about how closely tied her work was to community. And I'm wondering if you can speak to that, that intersection of art and the community in which it's made.
Sure. I think largely in the African-American community, art is not separate from community. It's how we pass on history. And so the medium of choice just becomes an extension of that. And so I think her work kind of embodies and personifies a long tradition of storytelling and community and village. And that's pretty much how, you know, I view it in that connection. And I think that thread still continues today.
Tell us about some of the art that you're really excited about going on right now in the city.
Oh, it's a lot. there are so many great artists. I mean, Lisa McClyman, who will be here in a few minutes, David Butler, Jay Cross, Richard Duarte. It's so many to name. You know, Hakeem Cowood. I mean, there are a lot of visual artists that are just making a name for themselves. So Greater Columbus may not know, but there is a, you know, sort of a movement that is happening amongst African-American visual artists and other artists. We got a chance to really highlight a lot of that during the Harlem Renaissance sort of campaign that went on, which I was very much involved in terms of, you know, the branding and marketing piece. But it was an opportunity to kind of highlight some of the great things that are happening. Betty Stahl has a show at Ross Arch Gallery in Ohio Wesleyan.
Yes,
that features
that's true.
A lot of artists from the ACE group that Kojo Kamau started.
What's the ACE group?
So Kojo Kamau was a Columbus photographer who started Artists for Community. I forget what the E stands for, empowerment maybe, which sent Amina and Larry Collins and other people, another artist to Africa. And so they were sort of a collective of black artists that came out of the 70s into the 80s. He photographed a lot of the Near East Side. So he was storytelling with photos, but he was sort of a conductor as well of, you know, black arts community and telling that story and a catalyst.
He graduated the same year as Amina from East High School.
Yeah, yeah. So they were all connected, yeah, you know.
They were.
Tell us more about some of the artists that we may not have known about that were, you know, either Amina's contemporaries or other really influential African-American artists that, as you mentioned, Greater Columbus might not be recognizing as much.
Well, it's interesting. You probably know the work of Percy King.
Yeah, yeah, I'm really,
so
really close with
Percy. The museum has just commissioned him. Actually, he's interesting because, for another reason, he also played football for Ohio State and then I think the Kansas City Chiefs,
if I'm
correct.
Yeah, for a little bit, yeah.
And then he did some other things and started making furniture. But even as a young kid, he had artistic leanings. And so more recently, he's been doing these fabulous kind of portrait reliefs that are quite wonderful. In fact, we had one of Langston Hughes up during I Too Sing America at the museum. Mm-hmm. So he's been commissioned to do a portrait of Amina, of Kojo, who Marshall just mentioned, of William Hawkins and Elijah Pierce. Mm-hmm. So those are four kind of big names that most people probably have heard of.
Yeah.
But Percy King, I think, kind of, you know, he's a younger artist and will kind of, it makes a nice connection with his contemporary interpretation of their portraits.
Yeah.
Me and Percy just did a pop-up in the Short North a couple months back. So we had a gallery there for about 2 months and shared a space. He's an amazing guy. Some other names that come to mind are like Fioris West, Ben Crumpler.
These Tell me more about their work.
Older. Well, you can see Ben Crumpler's work all around the city. I believe there's a hotel downtown where some of his work is. Fioris was a professor at Ohio State. Larry Collins was my professor at CCAD. He was a part of the ACE group. And he was really my introduction to Amina and the King Arts Complex and Kojo. And so if not for him, I probably wouldn't know as much about those people as a student at CCAD in 2001. So I have to give credit to him for, you know, kind of ushering me into that and falling in love with that history.
You talked a little bit about the ACE group back in the 70s. I'm wondering if there's an equivalent now, if there are organizations or even just, I guess, initiatives, so to speak, that are trying to make sure that this art is getting to where it needs to be, is getting in front of eyeballs.
Yeah, absolutely. There are quite a few, actually, and maybe not so broadcasted, but there are young artist collectives that are forming and doing great work. I'm a board member, a founding member of Maroon Arts Group. We built Shipping Container Gallery on Mount Vernon. I'm co-founder of Creative Control Fest, and we've just worked. I mean, there's so many things to kind of talk about. Transit Arts, who do a lot with youth. I don't want to get in trouble, you know, start naming names because there are so many people who are doing, you know, wonderful work. But, you know, it's not hard to find if you're looking, I guess, if that makes sense.
Do you think we're where we need to be? How have we evolved from, you know, the time where Amina was really making things happen in the 70s till now? How do you see that journey?
I think exposure is a lot more. You know, it's easier to get access to these people. The ways in which we engage art and view art are different, you know, with social media and the internet. So in many ways, we can connect without being face-to-face and experience art. But I think what they had was, you know, collectivity, and they were able to kind of move things together because they were kind of forced to do things face-to-face and organize gallery shows together and things like that. So, and of course, the time period of the 70s was pretty tumultuous in terms of, you know, race relations and things like that. So, not too different from today, but I think that also forced them to organize and mobilize. And you kind of see some of that trend happening today, you know, coming out of Black Lives Matter movement and some of those things. So this explosion of Black art that we see even in Columbus in response to some of this, you know.
Our times.
Yeah, our times.
Yeah.
And I think also Columbus has really gotten to value more art in general.
Sure.
They have this big campaign, Columbus Makes Art.
Yeah, yeah.
And you see a lot of diverse faces on that as well, and not only the visual arts, but dance and music.
Yeah.
I think economically it's drawn people to Columbus. The Short North has just taken off. And, you know, I think diversity really adds to that.
Absolutely. I agree.
So,
yeah.
In your TED Talk, TEDx talk here in Columbus, you spoke about how some of the struggles that the art world has in enacting diversity. Help us understand where those barriers exist and what needs to change, especially here in Columbus.
Sure. I think so. I kind of intersect that design and art, but I think both maybe posit itself as a meritocracy. So if you are good at what you do, and you're very skilled and you have a great narrative, then you can flourish and resources are available to you. But I don't necessarily believe that's true. And I don't know that all art is valued at the same way, which, you know, I don't know if that's the institution's job to do that or, you know, what that looks like. But I think there's still a lot of work in Columbus and beyond in order to amplify some of these stories. I think the Harlem Renaissance campaign attempted to do that. I think it'll remain to be seen if that's successful, if the Short North will continue to engage African-American artists in a real tangible way. And that becomes a part of the sort of mainstream economic. I mean, there's billions of dollars. Ohio is a billion-dollar art industry. They just released a report not too long ago.
Yeah.
I don't have a clear-cut
answer.
You know, a definitive answer for that. But I think there's a lot of work that can be done right here in Columbus. And I think amplifying those voices or giving them the platform to say what they need to say without restriction will help us move the needle a little bit forward.
Yeah. Carol, you've worked at CMOA for decades. How have you seen this evolution happen? For quite some time, art was completely, you know, handled by white gatekeepers. How did that affect artists of color?
Believe me, not in a very good way. Sometimes I'm amazed. We were saying before you got here, Marshall, I've been at the museum a really long time. And what just blows me away is that when I was in undergrad, I was a major in art history, and you know that big thick book, it's the Art 101. There was not one woman in that book. There wasn't even George O'Keefe or Nevelson, and let alone a woman of color. Men of color too. So if you go back that long as I do, yeah, there have been a lot of changes. And I have to say, you know, I think we've really opened up our doors. We have a lot of kinds of activities that invite people to participate and to kind of look into their own creativity. We've gone out of our way, I think, in hiring to have a more diverse staff. So I see a lot of that growth over the years, certainly at the museum. But that doesn't mean there can't be more and that we shouldn't always be working on it.
Mm-hmm. You are a person that's working on it in a lot of different regards. And one of those is Creative Control Fest. Mm-hmm. You're one of the main forces behind that. Can you tell us a little bit about what you are trying to do?
In short, you know, we want to have a platform that centers, you know, creatives of color. It's not exclusive to creatives of color, but as I got into my career 8 years ago when we started it, I just didn't see that voice contributing on the big stage. And so we wanted to create a stage that would sort of amplify that voice and also share resources and be a bridge between creative industries. When I found out how much creative industries contribute to Columbus economy, I began, and myself and my friends and our collective began to wonder, like, you know, where are we in that mm-hmm. creative economy? We know we contribute, but also where are we as far as our voices? And so at its core, that's what we want to do. And it has some offshoots and things that we do outside of the conference every year. But really, we want to be a voice and an advocate for change.
In the 7 years you've been doing it, what do you feel like is one of the big things you've heard back from the artists and the creatives of color that are coming to this festival every year?
The importance of space. Mm-hmm. Elsie Johnson just did a TED Talk, and she talked about fourth and fifth places and the concept of having a space where your voice isn't restricted, where you can truly be free and be yourself. And I think it's important for marginalized groups to have these spaces where they aren't having to change their behavior. Ta-Nehisi Coates was at Ohio State the other night, and he said something that really rung true. He said he writes like there's no white people in the room. And that's how he's been able to kind of free himself to say what he needs to say. And the result of that is that very many white people read his work now. You know what I mean? And so having that space to be that free in your artwork or what you create is groundbreaking. And I think other people will appreciate that authentic voice.
Marshall Schwartz is a Columbus-based designer and the founder of Artfluential, a creative design consulting firm. And Carol Genshaft is a curator at large at the Columbus Museum of Art. She's put together many exhibits of Amina Robinson's work. We're talking about Robinson and other artists of color here in Columbus this hour on All Sides Weekend. We'll be back in just a moment with more. Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. I'm your host, Claire Roth. We're talking about the artist Amina Robinson this hour and her influence on other African-American artists, plus the art community at large here in Columbus. Columbus-born and bred, Robinson earned a MacArthur Genius Grant in 2004 for her sculpture and other work. Eclectic, colorful, and warm, Robinson's pieces incorporated fiber, found objects, even mud. Still with us here in the studio this hour is Marshall Schwartz, a Columbus-based designer and the founder of Artfluential, a creative designing consulting firm, as well as Carol Genshaft, curator at large at the Columbus Museum of Art. And joining us now is Lisa McLimont. She's a sculptor and a painter in Columbus. She's been featured in Columbus Alive, Columbus Monthly, the Columbus Makes Art Project for her multimedia work. And she's also created the Universe Tribe series. It's a series of portraits of Black women made with paint and wood grain. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you very much.
So you have created a portrait of Robinson. Is that right?
I have. And I have another one in the works.
Tell me about them. How was it painting her? Why'd you decide to do it?
Well, I love her face. The shape of her eyes, and you can feel the wisdom as you're looking at her. And that's also the same for her hands. You can see the work in her hands or how she uses her hands for the work that she does. And it's just inspiring for me as a maker to record that. see the lines, see the depth, see the age and the wisdom. I just really got lost in all the folds.
Oh, I'm anxious to see that.
Rebecca Ebel has the piece now.
Oh, nowhere to find it.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
With the Universe Tribe series, you said that identity was really core to that. I was wondering if you could explain a little bit about that.
Okay, so the Universe Tribe series started for myself as a challenge to do more faces. I was one of the artists that started my focus on abstracts and landscapes, and I was kind of fearful of recording faces. I didn't want any weird eyes or expressions. I just wanted to be true to the expression and the mood. So I'd avoided it, and then by 2015, I decided I'm just going to go ahead and do it. And the very first portrait was one that I just... I focused on the heart chakra, so I used green and graphite and white and the wood as the individuality piece. So the wood texture became the foundation for the series that showcases the range of feeling and emotion for people of color. So I focus mostly on women because I feel like, women are beautiful, but true. There's a lot of strength that is discounted because the surface beauty is usually what's focused on. So I still focus on beauty in my piece, but I hope to bring out the beauty of a person's spirit inside through the work. Mm. And I think the wood, the texture in the wood capitalizes on that.
You were in a more traditional 9-to-5 for years and years, and then you decided, okay, I'm going to get back to really doing art on a, I don't know if a full-time basis is the right expression, but I'm wondering what it's like for you to make art here.
Wow. Okay. So I have to backtrack and say that my 9-to-5 was really 24-hour independent work, and I got burnt out. And in 2009, I decided to save my own self by doing my art, yeah. Focusing on my art. So that is what brought me back from the brink and actually regenerated my love of design, because I really do love graphic design, and that's my training. But the art is it's a meditative journey. It's the spiritualism in creating and using color to bring something to life out of your brain or out of your heart is really exciting. And to be inspired by living in Columbus and being surrounded so closely by a lot of creatives of all colors and walks. I mean, I came out in the city and I've been living here since high school, and I'm just floored by the amount of talent and knowledge that is sitting here. And I don't think the city takes it for granted. I think we're really aware of the creative class here, and I'm just so proud to be a part of it. So the series celebrates that.
This is something I'd like to talk to you guys about, because I keep saying, you know, the community of the art community here. But when you just talked about painting, it sounded so personal.
It is for me.
Yeah. So being an artist, is it a community endeavor? Is it an individual endeavor? How do you reconcile those things, I guess?
I think it's both.
Yeah, it's totally both for me, too.
I think
too.
It starts with the individual, but when you share that with the world, it's not yours anymore. Mm-mm. You know, it becomes the community's work in a sense. And so I think both personal and community, and if you follow philosophies of some, you know, arts movements, that art should push the needle forward for all people.
I totally agree with that. I would not be doing the art I'm doing without the community that I'm a part of. So they're hand in hand to me.
And just reading Amina's journals, I couldn't echo that more, because she really felt that she was a conduit higher place for what she was doing, and that it was for the community. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think that's probably why she left her work to the museum.
Yes.
You know, she really believed that that's what it's about.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's no longer your own.
Yeah.
We're talking this hour on All Sides Weekend about Amina Robinson and about other artwork made by creatives of color. If you have a piece of art that's spoken to you, if you want to join the conversation, call us at 614-292-8513. Right now on the line, we have T from Columbus. T, what is your question?
I would like to comment those young people who have taken up the torch and to carry on the work that Amina started, and Kojo and all the guys, Hawkins and Roman Johnson, and they are doing a fabulous job. And it amazes me to be able to stand back and see all of this happening right here in Franklin County. Mm-hmm. And Ace Gallery was one of the first galleries that were established in the art district there. And many of those artists have passed on, but they also were able to exhibit their works in that gallery. And the only reason we were able to get that space is because Sandy, who is a realtor right here in Columbus, gave us the space and said, hey, you can go in there. It was an old car shop. Gave it to us and told us, go in there and you can refurbish it and you can have it as a gallery if you want. And that's what we did. We cleaned it up and we had wall space to hang the work. And ACE actually means art for the community expression.
Mm.
And it was set up basically for the artists in the community.
It was a beautiful space.
It was, wasn't it beautiful space?
Yes.
And we were able to do that. I mean, and Ohio is like a little treasure. It's a place where you can work and create the work. You've got the quiet space to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time that we were coming along, there were a lot of empty buildings in our neighborhood. And so we would go in and use these buildings to create the work. Theoris, all of those guys had little spaces in the community where they could actually create the work. Queen Brooks. And they, yeah, and they would bring the children in. The children had spaces where they could go after school and just hang out with those wonderful artists that are still living right here in Franklin County. And so what I have saw is the fact that they stayed, and we've got young people that are staying here to create their work.
Wow.
Yep. Wasn't that a wonderful thing?
Thank
that
you
so
much for sharing. I really appreciate that call.
Yeah.
There's really that legacy there. There's
yes, I feel very tied to the legacy. I didn't. I met Amina once, and I didn't get to talk to her, and I wasn't living as my artist self then. So it was a distant fan thing, which I do often. I think my deeper connection, or my original connection, I'll give credit to Queen, because she was the first woman of color who was very aware of herself and her power and her talent.
Tell us quickly about her as an artist for those of us unfamiliar.
So Queen Brooks was part of the Ace Gallery, another visual artist, very colorful works, very tribal, more abstracts, but I would say the abstracts felt more like portraits to me, which is kind of funny. But just so open and willing to give time to anybody. I was such a young person, and to meet her, she just became a hero for me. So through the years, just kept tabs on her, and I always want to give her honor. Queen is a big inspiration.
And she's still teaching.
Yeah, she is. She's amazing.
What T said brings up such an interesting point to me, and maybe we're a little bit limited here because most of us have been in Columbus for quite some time, but what is Columbus like, you know, compared to other places? So many people think art, you got to go to the coast. Is this a better place in some regards to make art because of the way we're situated, because we have all that space, as T said?
I think Columbus is enough. We just shot a mini documentary in Harlem, which was such great energy. But I left coming back to Columbus. I'm Cleveland native, but Columbus has it. You know, I don't know if it's been discovered at its full potential yet, but I think, you know, we have what we need here to be a Harlem in terms of, you know, that what Harlem is known for in terms of artistic expression for Black artists. What we lack is maybe more space, spaces. For that to flourish and happen. There is space for art here, but you don't see as many African-Americans occupying that space. So that's why we, you know, with Maroon Arts Group, we built a space out of shipping containers. And this summer we'll have individual artists, you know, showing there through our season. You know, and so we need more of that going on. We need more spaces for that kind of work and that voice to be heard.
I was a founding member of Art and Artists Of, which is a Facebook group. Last I checked, it was about 15,000 members, which is kind of amazing.
Wow.
But that, to me, is a picture of what's happening in the arts nationwide, because we started different groups based on area code. So we've covered Ohio. There's a couple of chapters in Florida, and there's Chicago and Alaska, of all places. But the most active, the most supportive, the most vocal, the widest range of talent is right here in 614. It's an amazing, very inspirational group. So, you know, artists that are new all the way up to professional, longstanding professional artists chime in periodically. And it's a really solid group, and I'm pretty proud of that. But to me, that shows how powerful our community is. And it seems underground, but like Marshall said earlier, you just scratch the surface, you'll trip over mm-hmm. all of the depth that's here. It's really, really great.
Once you open your eyes, you'll see it everywhere.
Yes, everywhere.
We've got another call I'd love to get to talking about Amina Robinson. This is Rashida from Columbus. Rashida, what would you like to add to the program today?
Yes. Amina and I grew up here in Poindexter Village. In fact, I still live here. I've had a presence on this land for my family has ever since almost 100 years in the Blackberry Patch. But anyway, we went to, as I said, we grew up here in Poindexter Village, and we went to the same schools. And one of the things that still kind of rings with me with Amina was when we were going to Champion Junior High School, I remember her sitting in late class, as they used to call it, and drawing in a stenographer's pad. And then at the same time, and this person probably has never been mentioned in her own development, was an art teacher at Champion, and her name was Evelyn Deloach. And she was the one that was, I would say, was the person who really promoted her during that time, because she always saw to it that she had whatever it was that she needed to draw and stuff like that. And then later on, throughout my life, I from time to time would go and see Amina, and especially after she went to Egypt. And she told me one day she looked at some stuff that I had done, and it really like made me really feel good, because she said, oh, I like that. I like that.
Well, Rashida, thank you so much for sharing that story today. A thread that I feel like has been going through this hour is a lot of support, a lot of lifting one another up within this community. I wonder if that's a Columbus-specific thing or if that happens in any given art community around the world, because it just feels like there's not a cutthroat sense that we've heard about today.
No, I want to say that it's more about community for the majority of the artists that I know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thankful to know quite a few.
Yeah.
I mean, walking down the street with Amina was like walking with a rock star. And not just actually in Columbus, but in other places we went too. But, you know, she worked for like 19 years for Columbus Recreation and Parks. So she taught a lot of kids, a lot of black kids. And people would come up, you know, many years later, and she had a great memory, like a steel trap memory. And she would, you know, remember incidents with these kids who are now adults. And I think, you know, they felt that same thing, that she was just an inspiration to
really?
Them. It was a whole generation, really.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't all turn out to be artists necessarily. Mm-hmm. But
but they were impacted by the power of community and being part of that.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. We have a question from another person, Daryl. We won't put him on air, but he asked what will become of Amina's home, if it might become an artist residency. Do you know anything about that?
I hope so.
Any guesses?
I do. We had a community advisory group that met for a year in the last couple of years since she passed away. Unanimously, they agreed that we would all like to see the house become an artist residence. So that's happening. We're working with GCAC and probably the Ohio History Center.
Excellent.
To make that happen, because there's a lot that goes into setting up a residency, mm-hmm. in addition to renovating the house and making it livable.
Mm-hmm.
But then just your parameters and how you want that to function. So, but that is the plan, and you should be hearing more about that quite soon.
So excited.
If someone wants to see Amina's work, if someone wants to see work by Robinson, I know a lot of it, you know, privately owned, but where can they find it right now? Yeah, but if they can't wait till next year when the new exhibit goes up.
Right now, there's a gallery of her work. It's called Kindred Spirits. It's she was mentored by Elijah Pierce, the Columbus folk artist, and she had this very She was absolutely really inspired and influenced by him. So there's a gallery of their work that's up at the museum that will be up for the really, I think, most of the year. There's also going to be an exhibition that opens February 28th at the Faculty Club of her work. That's the museum Anne Hammond Harkins, which is her gallery, is putting up. There's actually a very small group of her wonderful rag paintings from To Be a Drum, a published book that's at Columbus Academy now through March 8th. So the work is definitely out there. There's probably some that I don't even know about. But, yes, it's available, and come and visit the museum to see some.
I think there's also maybe some in the Ohio Wesleyan show that you mentioned earlier. I'm not entirely sure.
I'm not sure either.
If she's included, but that is an amazing show that should be checked out.
I'm always surprised to see where her work is. I mean, the Freedom Center in Cincinnati has a huge,
huge piece.
Quilt. I saw the piece in the Brooklyn Museum. I was really shocked when I went there a couple years ago and saw that. So you may find it anywhere.
And hopefully more so.
Yeah.
Going forward.
We've been talking so much about community and the intersection with art. I'd love to talk to the two of you. I'd love to hear from you why art is your medium, why you choose visual arts as a way to express, you know, a reaction to so much. Why do you feel like that acts as a better bridge than, you know, just words or just talking with someone?
I feel like I am in a disagreement because I feel like words can paint a picture.
Yeah.
So I would clump them in with the same category as visual art. But that said, for myself, visual art is a way to speak to more people and leave a bigger impact. And that is why I became a graphic designer. You know, there was just like a wider way to speak to the people, as opposed to standing on a stage, which is not my introvert self. It's tendency to do.
And yet here you are on the radio.
Well, I'm on the radio.
I would echo that. Yeah. A poet friend of mine, Barbara Fant, talks about her poetry being the only way she knows how to pray. And so I think art is a communication tool, but it asks the questions that, you know, we may not be able to verbalize. It allows us to feel when society doesn't always give us that opportunity to feel and express that feeling and that rage sometimes or happiness. And so for me, art has always sort of been a vehicle to connect with other people, even in just conversation. I grew up drawing. My dad did it. He let it go. So he said, God gave it to you. So you got to do something with it. So that was my charge. And they created opportunities for me to be able to do that. And so I think the importance of art, not just as art on the walls or for consumption, but for a vehicle and a tool and a lever for our, you know, liberation, for our freedom, but also for our communication and connection with other cultures and things like that. So,
you know, Amina always said that she wasn't an artist. It was just the way she walked.
Yeah.
Wow. And I think that's pretty much wraps it up for her.
Yeah.
It was just the way she breathes and walks and is.
Was. Yeah. I said that I got into my artist self in 2009 because I was depressed because I was ignoring a whole side of myself. So this is a part of me. I can't ignore it. It is what I have to do. So, like, I'm going to do it no matter what, whether it sells or not, whether people see it or not, which, of course, I hope they you know, sell, and I hope people see. What I know that people see, I love that it resonates.
Yeah.
So that is definitely good payment from doing the work.
Lisa McMillan, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Columbus-based sculpture and mixed media artist Marshall Schwartz, thank you so much for talking today.
Thank you.
Columbus-based designer, founder of Artfluential, a creative design consulting firm, and Carol Genshaft, thank you. Curator-at-large at the Columbus Museum of Art. We have been talking about Amina Robinson this hour. It's All Sides Weekend. This show is produced by Mary Lee Williams and Kyle McKinnon, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. You can find us online at wosu.org/allsides. I'm Claire Roth. Have a great weekend.